Welcome to the Common Sense Spirituality Show, the show that takes the mystery out of spirituality with your host, David Gagan, engineer, science director, scholarly researcher of life's mysteries, and author of The Endless Journey.
Welcome to the Common Sense Spirituality Show. I'm host Dave Gagan, and today's show is titled Anger. Please note that all the chat room questions will be answered in the chat room on next week's show, as well as posted on my website, which is davidgagan.com, normally within a few days of the show. I understand that some of you are not aware that you can easily access these answers on my website, so I encourage you to visit the site where you can also ask additional questions, even about other shows. You can also listen to any of the previous shows on iHeartRadio at iHeart.com by searching for David Gagan or the Common Sense Spirituality Show. We encourage and welcome your questions. Anger is something we all experience and need to understand better. What we don't usually appreciate is the negative impact anger has on our lives. Not only does it make others unhappy, it makes us unhappy as well. Worse yet, anger can become a habit that not only makes us miserable to live with, it can even make us ill. The stress which constant anger puts on our bodies, both mentally and physically, can actually cause physical ailments and diseases. We're going to look at ourselves today and see if we can recognize any bad habits or behavior patterns that we could easily alter, which could improve our lives. Today's guest is Leonard Sheff, co-author of The Cow in the Parking Lot, A Zen Approach to Overcoming Anger. Mr. Sheff is a lawyer and a Buddhist who, for the past 15 years, has conducted seminars for overcoming anger. Leonard Sheff, welcome to the show, Leonard.
Thank you very much, Dave. Glad to be here and looking forward to sharing my thoughts.
Yeah, well, so am I. And you wrote a book, and your book is The Cow in the Parking Lot. Where did you get that name? Why did you call it The Cow in the Parking Lot?
That's the first question everybody asked. It's from a parable I made up to open the door to changing anger habits. You're in a new shopping center on the edge of town, and since they're giving away a lot of stuff, half the town is there, and you've been looking for a parking place for 10 minutes, and finally there it is, the car in front of you, the backup lights come on, you stop, turn on your turn signal, and as the car backs toward you, a Jeep from the other direction comes spurting into the parking place. And when you honk, the young man driving the Jeep gets out, and he smirks at you. Are you angry? And the answer for most people is, of course I am. Now we'll change the facts ever so slightly. The car in the front, the backup lights come on, and as the car backs up, a cow walks into the space and settles down. The truth is that this may have been where he spent every afternoon for years. And when you honk, the cow looks up and moos. Are you angry? And of course, the answer for most people is no, it'll be a good tale to tell at the next cocktail party. And so my question is, what's the difference? And the answer basically is that there is no difference. In both instances, you still have to look for a parking place. And so why are you angry in one case and not another is the starting point for contemplation of your anger.
Kind of makes us think about ourselves a little bit. So it's really very good when you explain it like that.
Yeah. Well, now, that's the first thing in the book, is there's a sort of frontispiece explaining what I just did.
Yeah, right. Now you've been a lawyer, and your book is about anger and how it's detrimental to our lives. But as a trial lawyer, you said in the book that at one time you felt like anger was a helpful tool in winning your cases. What made you change your mind?
Well, lots of things, but primarily the teachings of the Dalai Lama and the experience I had of integrating it into my life, and I began to realize that it wasn't. I didn't know it, but most experienced trial lawyers tell their witnesses one thing you should never be is angry. And I don't remember for sure if I let somebody get angry on the stand, which would be, you know, a terrible thing. But once I realized that people don't like angry people, I realized that went for judges and juries and other lawyers. And so it became an easy choice to change.
Yeah, I can see that. The nature of anger, when anger happens to it, it's kind of like a flash, it seems, all of a sudden, bingo, it doesn't slowly boil up. It all of a sudden flashes. Is there a biological, aspect of this that we should know and understand about what happens to us when these things happen?
You need to understand that as much as I'm putting down anger is a natural human emotion, and it comes from a portion of the brain called the amygdala, which means almond. It's a very small, there are a couple of them, and it sends out a very strong signal when you're angry. But the reality is that signal only lasts for 7 seconds. And the anger that we have problems with is the anger that we stretch out by attaching a story to it, like I'm a victim or I'm a martyr. You shouldn't have done that to me. And the anger that might have occurred at 3 in the afternoon may wake you up at 3 at night because you're keeping it alive. And so the extent that you're doing that, that you're consciously making yourself suffer.
Is there an off button for that anger?
For that? Well, not for the 7 seconds worth, but the off button is that you read my book. There are lots of things that you can do to turn off the anger. And the first thing that you have to realize, and the most important, is that you have a choice not to be angry, not to carry the anger on after the event. And the second thing is that the first person hurt by my anger is me. And once you really accept those two principles, you're on your way.
We don't see that, and there's a lot of you talk about quite a bit about that in the book, and I want to get into that as we go along. But is there data to show that anger is destructive to us emotionally?
Well, any doctor will tell you that it creates high blood pressure and various things, and can lead to heart attacks. A person who's perpetually angry is shortening his life expectancy or her life expectancy.
Yeah, I could believe that. Any circumstances that you can think of where anger is actually positive? Is it good?
Well, anger occasionally can be positive. I was giving my seminar in San Francisco, and one young man who was an architect in rebuilding the San Francisco City Hall after a large earthquake told about this experience he had with another architect, and they had an argument about how to fix a certain problem. And he said it was a point where they were yelling at each other and their screams were bouncing off the marble walls, when all of a sudden each of them realized that they had something to add. And so the anger went away. They, as a matter of fact, hugged each other and solved the problem. That happens occasionally, but that's in winning the lottery category. It's like being in a duel and both parties fire at the same time and the bullets collide. The position I take in the book is that anger can be occasionally beneficial, but it's so seldom, it's better to say that it's never beneficial, because you'll tend to overdo that. My anger is always justified, yours never is. And that's one of the things that you have to go past in order to get on the other side of anger.
Yeah. In your book, you identify three reasons for getting angry. And the ones that you mentioned that I'm referring to are normal human response, no obvious alternative, and an interesting one at the end, it can be addictive. Can you talk about those three things?
Well, people mistake anger for giving them a powerful position. And so they think this is the thing to do. There is a rush that comes with it, a high feeling that comes with being angry, feeling of power and of really being alive. But these are false feelings. What you're really doing is injuring yourself and making a successful outcome of whatever the problem is far less likely.
The part about addictive, can we get in the habit of just being angry? You know, we go off the deep end at the slightest provocation?
Of course. My brother's father-in-law used to get angry every time a light would turn from green to red before he got through the intersection. I mean, every time. Nobody wanted to drive with him. And he'd even occasionally run a light. He was so angry. And we all have our different ways of expressing it. But I'm sure everyone listening to this program knows an angry person.
No
and
question.
These people that this is their high.
Because they get obviously an emotional rush out of it, even though it's negative, it's a rush.
Right. It's not as good as happiness, but they don't know that.
Yet. You talked about a couple things in your book about justifying anger. We justify it to ourselves. Mm-hmm. And one of them I particularly liked, I liked them all, but one of them I particularly liked is reform the offender.
Right.
And you know, that's very true. Talk a little bit about that. But it kind of hits home, doesn't it?
Well, we think, like the guy that stole our parking place, if we do something to him, like one young lady in the seminar said, I'd take my lipstick out as soon as out of sight and write jerk on his windshield. And the reality is, you don't teach anybody anything unless they want to learn from you. It can happen accidentally, of course, but you're not about to reform this young man by writing jerk on his windshield. There are basically two possibilities: that when he comes back to his car and discovers a bright red jerk on the windshield, he'll say, oh my God, I have sinned, I've offended someone, and I'm so glad that they were good enough to point it out to me. Or he can say, no good, lousy son of a, why does this always happen to me? And then manage to be angry for the rest of the day or the rest of the week or whatever, and take out his anger on other people, like his wife or his children, or for that matter, kick the dog. And so when you try to reform somebody, you're taking a big responsibility, because you're sending his anger further downstream. And it just doesn't work. He's going to grab the next parking place, perhaps with more relish.
Yeah. Now, you did say that, you know, we get a feeling of power sometimes, but you also said that it keeps us from feeling like a victim.
Well, we think that it keeps us from feeling like a victim because we do something to the other person, and so we're not a victim, but it doesn't solve the problem that brought it up. And it's not going to keep the other person from doing whatever they're doing just because you're angry at them. It might temporarily, but they will take it out in some other way, as it says in the book extensively.
You still lost your parking place to the
That's right.
Jeep. Yeah. Revenge.
And you're not going to prevent anybody else from losing their parking place to him.
Well, that's exactly right. Revenge. You know, that's a common reason for anger. You know, a lot of times, you know, you think somebody has done you wrong, and they may not even be around. They may not even know they've done you wrong. But you're sitting there plotting revenge, you know. You know, that's how does that work?
Well, you want to do them harm. As I say in the book, that and as you mentioned, this person might not realize that it was you that he was aiming at, even though he was talking right to you or whatever he was doing to you. It just happened that you're a prop in his internal drama. And by plotting revenge, you can screw up your whole life. Great example is, of course, Moby Dick, where Ahab spends his life chasing after a whale.
Yeah, that is true. We do assume the intention of people.
Yes.
And you know you could be at a party and somebody can say something and their mind can be, you know, 1,000 miles away thinking of somebody that has irritated them, and they say something about this type of person, and we take it personal. It's awfully easy to misinterpret what other people are talking about.
And even if it's aimed directly at you, what good does it do to get angry? Not only are you insulted, but you're feeling bad now. And the fact of the matter is it really doesn't take care of your being insulted, and it gives you an additional problem.
Yeah. So you know, our perception of the situation that makes us angry is often just that, our view, and it may not have an awful lot to do with reality, or certainly somebody else's view that you may be targeting the anger at.
Right. Let me skip back one step and talk about the cause of anger.
Okay.
I'm particularly proud of the cause of anger that we list in the book. And you notice I say cause, not causes. And the cause of anger is an unmet demand. So that if your demand is that somebody not insult you, you get angry if you think that they've insulted you. That was my very first experience with applying the Dalai Lama's teachings. When I sat through 3 days of the Dalai Lama's teachings, I thought to myself, he's a nice man, but he's crazy if he thinks I'm going to give up anger. And the following night, I was out driving and somebody pulled in front of me. And it wasn't terribly close, but I had to slam on my brakes. And so I honked at him, and not the little short honk, but the long, angry honk. And out of his window came his upraised finger. And I was thinking, should I ram his car? Should I sit on my horn for a long time? Should I chase after him? And then it hit me. I just sat through 3 days of misery. Maybe I should try it. So I said, what difference does it make that he gave me the finger? For all I know, he might have been trying to see if it's raining. It's me giving the finger meaning, not him. And what is my unmet demand? I'm expecting a total stranger to respect me. And I actually started laughing. And I was hooked on giving up anger at that point. It wasn't easy, and it took years to keep doing anger, but finally I've gotten past it 99%.
Yeah, let's continue on this unmet needs, because I thought it was pretty interesting. You had four types of unmet needs,
right?
And it was important and reasonable, reasonable but unimportant, irrational and impossible. Could you go through those, explain them, and maybe give examples for each one of those?
Well, the silly one, the first one, is the guy giving me the finger. You know, it's just silly that I would get upset with him giving me the finger. And then there's the unimportant one. Might be reasonable, but it's unimportant. Like you go in a restaurant and the maitre d' shows you to a table that you don't like. And rather than just say, could I have another table, you get angry and say, that table isn't for me. And all you've done is increase the likelihood there'll be something else in your soup. And then there's the one that's reasonable. I mean, somebody drops a brick on your foot and you get angry. It hurts. But what do you gain again by being angry? You're not only in pain, but you're in mental pain of being angry, and it is not going to do a thing to make your foot better. And the final one is the impossible, where you might want everyone to respect you, or you might want everyone to do what you want them to do for world peace, or all of these things. And that one, if you have that sort of perpetual demand on the world, which frankly isn't going to happen, all you've done is committed yourself to an ongoing low-grade anger, and low-grade anger produces a base for high-grade anger to bubble up out of when something happens, particularly something in regard to your particular demand on the world.
So that's, you know, that's I think really insightful. When we get angry, we don't recognize that we're looking for something. We have a need. We have some unmet need. We do, and if you stop to think about it for a second, you could recognize that.
That you just put your finger on the secret. When you're angry and you stop to think, that's the first step in detaching yourself from the anger.
Yeah. Yeah, I suspect that if you could get through that 7-second time lag, things would, you know, then you could maybe start getting reasonable again, rational.
Right. And that's an important point. In martial arts, they teach you not to become angry, because when you become angry, you're more likely to lose. Other disciplines have the same message. When you're acting out of anger, you're probably going to act irrationally and maybe even stupidly.
Yeah, we've all experienced that.
Yeah, I was in a filling station filling up my car, and a woman was filling up her car. And the kid was in the back seat screaming, and she was yelling and screaming to him to shut up. And he kept screaming, and she finally finished filling her car. And she got into her car, and he's still screaming. And she started it up and turned around and yelled at him and let the car roll into a post and said to him, "Now look what you've made me do." And that's, you know, a classic case. We do that.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, there's one other thing that you had in your unmet demands, which I really liked, and it was our unspoken demands. And where we assume somebody else knows all about what our problem is.
Right.
And of course they don't, because their world is different than ours.
Did you like the flight path?
The flight path. What was that? Which one was that?
You're a young lady who doesn't seem to be able to develop a long-term relationship with a significant other. And the fact is that you have a flight path for someone to come into your heart. And if you come in too high or too low, it doesn't work. Too far to the right or too far to the left, it doesn't work. If you come in too fast or too slow, it doesn't work. But I'm not going to tell you what any of those are.
Yeah, I do remember that. That was good. That was good.
Let me say one other thing about a demand.
Okay.
Very frankly, my editor and my co-author didn't like the fact that I was using the word demand. And the demand is something that's significant enough to cause you anger. It isn't that I would like vanilla instead of strawberry. It's a situation where I demand that you remember my birthday. If I just like you to remember my birthday, I'm not going to get angry over it. And so when the book uses the term unmet demand, it means it. It doesn't mean any request that you might have another person.
Right. It takes a demand type of statement to get angry about.
Well, it takes something in your mind that is a demand, not just a desire.
Right.
So those are the things that when they're not met will trigger anger. Like, I don't want you to hurt me, but if somebody drops a brick on your foot, well, they haven't honored your demand.
Let's talk a little bit about the cost of it. You mentioned that several times. Tell me some of the things that we end up hurting us during for this being angry.
Well, it doesn't help. It doesn't feel good to be angry. We do a little workshop number where I ask people to think about something that made me angry and note how they feel. And now think about something that made them happy and know how they feel and which do they like better. I mean, the choice is always the same. We talked about high blood pressure and things like that. And then we also mentioned the fact that when you act out of anger, you're likely to be irrational and not get the result that you want.
You also mentioned something. Well, you mentioned one thing that was it spills over to others.
Right.
Yeah, I thought that was, well, certainly true.
Did you like the third bear story?
Remind me again.
Yeah. That was from my wife's family. They always said you've been third bear when somebody else's anger ended up in your lap.
How about bad karma? You said it brings on bad karma. That's certainly a Buddhist perspective. It's also my perspective. But talk about how that might bring on bad karma.
Well, the Dalai Lama said that karma is about not only the act that you do, but it's also about the results of that act. There's a Buddhist parable that is not in the book, and I didn't put it in the book because I couldn't understand it, but I've come to understand it, and if you don't mind, I'll tell it.
Please do.
The Buddha is aboard a boat. This may be a previous incarnation of the Buddha, not the Buddha, and it comes to his attention that the captain is going to sink the boat after removing everybody's valuables and let everybody drown except him and the crew. And so the Buddha tries everything to stop him from doing it and can't. And so finally concludes that he has to kill the captain to save the hundreds of people on board. So he does. And the puzzling thing is at the end says that the Buddha did the right thing, but he'll have bad karma for that. And I couldn't understand that for a long time, but my understanding of it now is that the bad karma is that once you've killed a person for however good reason, it's easier the next time to do it again. It takes less of a cause to do it again. And that's what bad karma is about, is that if you do an act which is contrary to humanity or whatever, you're making it easier for you to do further acts to that end.
I hadn't thought of karma that way. It's worth pondering.
Well, karma is so heavily misused. It's almost ridiculous. As we point out in the book, people talk about parking karma.
I know.
And things like that. Deepak Chopra's idea of the karma that comes from anger is that when you're content and you're calm, the world is an infinity of choices, a great buffet of choices. But when you get angry, it's all of a sudden your choices collapse and you see a single path, which probably isn't a good one. And he refers to that as karma, which is something that I think of often.
I look at karma as an education process more than a penalty process. It's kind of, you know, when we do something and we do something stupid or wrong, I look at it as ignorance as opposed to evil. And as such, somebody has to teach us that that's wrong and there's some right way to do it. And that's how I look at karma.
I have not heard that definition before, but I can see how you get there.
Let's talk about some of the solutions. Now, you know, of being angry. And what I'm getting from you is we need to be more aware of our anger. In other words, there's anger that's sarcasm is anger, and ridicule is anger. You know, there are little bits of anger, but they're anger. But
yes.
there's an awareness that we need to have, and so there's probably a bunch of things that each one of us has that are more important than others that. You mentioned in your book would be hot buttons.
Right.
And let's talk about some of the hot buttons that we might have.
Well, I list some of them. Everybody's hot buttons may be different, but pride and honor and things like that are so frequently misused. Well, they should be a good concept. They're so frequently misused that something that you might want to avoid. There was a young man who killed another young man, and they asked him why, and he said, "Well, he dissed me. What else could I do?" His honor was offended, so he killed another human being, and that's how extreme it can get. And these are, as we'd say in computer language, pre-programmed. It isn't like it's something that happens in the moment. It's something that you're carrying around with you, loaded and ready to go off. That's a button.
Now you mentioned a couple here, and I'm sure there's far more than this, but independence was one of them.
That's right.
Talk to me about it.
The reality is that we're all dependent. And to the extent that we think we're independent, we're not doing ourselves any favor. And when someone tries to make us dependent, we may turn down something that's in our best interest. I worked at a homeless shelter for a while, and one night the rain predicted, and so it was really packed, but then the weather guy came on and said, "The rain isn't going to make it, it's going to be a clear night." And a lot of the people that had checked in there started clearing out. And he says, I don't want to take anything from these do-gooders that I don't have to. He viewed himself as independent, but the fact is he was more dependent than most anyone else.
Yeah. Yeah. Excuse me, go ahead.
Go ahead.
You had jealousy, and that's pretty straightforward. You know, there's jealousy is a common thing that makes us makes us angry. Respect is another one. Approval was interesting. We want people's approval for our actions.
As I note elsewhere in the book, the way to have self-esteem is not to have approval from other people, but one of the ways is to overcome anger so that anger isn't controlling you, you're controlling anger, and that will create self-esteem and approval right there, but from you.
Now, hatred.
What?
Hatred.
Right.
It's not really a hot button, is it? Because it kind of lingers there. It just with us.
It is a hot button because it may be aimed at a certain thing, like hatred of Jews, hatred of blacks, hatred of Democrats, hatred of Republicans, and so that whenever one of these units comes into your consciousness, your button goes off. And we see the terrible things of the 20th century that occurred because of people locking and loading their button to extraordinary extent.
Now we also have a tendency to push other people's hot button. We know what it is.
Yes.
And we take advantage of that, don't we?
And that makes you more vulnerable when you have an obvious button.
Yes, I imagine it does. Now let's go to the other side. Okay, so we know we're more aware of what causes our problem, and we know we've got these unmet needs that we need to sit there and think about.
Unmet demands.
Yeah. How should we respond? What do we do that will help us in, when the guy pulls into the parking lot?
Well, you just say, okay, I'll find another parking space. You don't go and let the air out of his tires or right jerk on his windshield. That's all extra effort for you. And you move on. No big deal. And you know what? If you never find a parking place, it's okay. You just save money.
you start out, I guess, and we take a breath. We try to find ourselves, make some space between the event and our reaction.
Right? Absolutely, absolutely on point.
And then when we do get ourselves in this situation and say, you're face to face with somebody. You mentioned in the book that we were supposed to check their body language, check their face, try to look at the language, not just the verbal language, but the language. What's going on with these people? A lot of times, the world we interface with, these people are having a bad day. Might be us having a bad day.
Yes.
But if we could recognize the circumstances that we're in, then it would be easier to say, all right, I see that. I'll deal with that. It's not quite as bad as maybe I first thought it was.
Well, you mentioned awareness previously, and of course that's the root core of Buddhism. Buddha means the aware one.
Right.
And the facial language, the body language is another source of information coming to you. that we usually disregard. And if we're really angry at somebody, we completely disregard all of the information we can get. And there may be lurking around a solution that we're overlooking.
Yeah. Now, one of the things that you said is to that we could kind of help ourselves start thinking differently, or at least this is the way I took it, is to try to be more generous. You know, maybe random acts of kindness. Start thinking differently about the world and how we interface with it.
Well, that's absolutely the case, is that as you begin to be generous with the world around you, the world reacts better to you. I've got that quote from William Makepeace Thackeray that the world, something to the effect that the world treats a person of goodwill with goodwill. And that's simply the case. And I have no doubt that your life will improve as you make a point of giving things away and receiving them and receiving things graciously. St. Francis saying that giving is receiving really covers the whole waterfront on that issue.
Yeah, I think it's very true when you think about it. You know, very often, I mean, not as a kid, but as an adult, you feel better about giving something to somebody than you actually do getting it, it seems like.
Yeah.
Humor and empathy. You said, hey, that's a good way to diffuse a difficult situation.
Exactly.
Yeah. I'll tell you, there's a lot of interesting things in your book, and I think people will get a lot out of it. One of the things that I noticed in the book is that you seem to think, or you said that your approach was different than anger management. How is it different?
Well, I've looked at a lot of anger management books, and anger management doesn't teach you how to overcome anger. It teaches you how to control your anger. And I say that's like keeping a vicious dog on a leash. You might limit the number of people he bites, or you might keep him from biting people at all, but he can still bite you or other people unless you're constantly working against him. The other thing that anger management does is it probes into your psychology. You're mean to women because your mother mistreated you or something like that. We don't do that. The anger management tools tend to be like 14 steps for this kind of anger and 12 steps for that kind of anger, which nobody can really remember. The keystone in writing our book was simplicity. We succeeded most of the time. There are a few places where we went a little deep, but basically it's a simple instruction book for overcoming anger. As I said at the beginning, I can summarize the book by saying you're hitting your hand with a hammer, and if you stop, you'll feel better. Anger management doesn't have any of that simplicity.
You teach seminars. How often do you teach seminars?
Well, I haven't since the book came out, except for a few times. I'm pretty old now and not up to traveling around. And so on occasion, somebody lasts for an hour talk, as you've done. Which I do, but I'm no longer giving the seminars unless it's a special reason to.
Are the seminars being given?
No.
Oh, okay. So
I tried to convince my daughter to take it over, but she's having too much fun practicing law.
Following in your footsteps.
Indeed.
Yeah, but she probably is better with anger than you first were.
Yes. Yeah. She got the message. She didn't want to admit it, but I finally got it out of her that she read my book and liked it.
How'd you get into Buddhism? And do you need to know something about Buddhism? I mean, you've got it in the title a little bit of it. Or do you feel that this is more of a common sense and you've pulled the common sense out of Buddhism and put it in the book?
Well, you certainly don't need to be a Buddhist to either benefit or understand this book. As I state in there, giving up anger makes you a better Christian or a better Muslim or a better Jew, or it makes an atheist a better person. There's nothing in here that anyone has ever told me offends their religion. And if you take a look at the reviews, and there are over 200 now in Amazon, you'll see that all sorts of people have indicated that the book changed their lives, which is so incredibly pleasing to me that I can't tell you.
No, I can believe that completely, absolutely completely. If I said, okay, what's the single most important thing you recommend that people walk away with to keep in mind when they're angry, what would that be?
Well, the first two are anger is a destructive emotion, and the first person hurt by your anger is you. And if you go to page 193 of the book, we have the tab that you should carry with you. And as I believe it says, in case of an anger attack, read this, and it has the five principles that acting out of anger is likely to make you act irrationally, and that, let's see, I don't remember the fourth one, the final one is, as anger goes down in your life, your happiness increases.
Yeah, well, I think most people can kind of feel that. I'll tell you what I took away, I took a lot away, but if I thought about it, you know, you point out that when an anger situation arises, we are almost always partly responsible for it. And if we could recognize that, it may be a small part, but we're still part of the circumstance most of the time. And if we could appreciate where we are in the circumstance and back off a little bit. And then to realize that what we're trying to do is transform that anger into compassion and realize that, hey, they may be having a bad day. We may be having the bad day. We both may be having the bad day. And if we could just kind of let it all go for really a few seconds here, things might change dramatically. And we might not quite make a fool of ourselves that we were about to do.
I can guarantee your listeners that the first time that you're angry at somebody and you manage to change it into compassion for that purpose, you'll get a high of unbelievable proportions. I can remember the first time it happened to me. It was just incredible, and I kept thinking about it.
Well, I'll tell you, I think you're probably absolutely right. We've kind of come to an end here. We've been talking with Leonard Sheff, the co-author of The Cow in the Parking Lot, A Zen Approach to Overcoming Anger. It's been great to have you on the show. Is there anything that you'd like to tell the viewers about? I guess do you have a website or anything that they can find? They can certainly find the book. Where do they find the book? Amazon?
Well, it is on Facebook, and what you'll find is it's now out in 18 languages, which also pleases the punch out of me.
Right.
You can get it at your neighborhood bookstore or from Amazon. It's generally available. The publisher is sort of astounded that it's been out for 4 years now and it's still selling well. And as one comment was that this will become a classic, and I hope that that's the case. so I can leave an inheritance to the world.
There you go. Leonard, it's been great to have you on. Leonard Cheff, thank you so much for being on with us today.
Thank you, Dave. How many people might hear this?
I actually have no idea. Radio is a funny thing. You just don't know how many people will tune into it.
Well, how many stations?
Oh, I think we're in 45 countries.
Ah, okay.
So I'm not, I can't count the stations and such.
Well, thank you very much for the privilege of talking with you.
Okay, thanks for being with us. Obtaining wisdom is a long process, as no one can bestow it on us. The more we talk and hear each other's ideas, the more we'll be able to mature our own views. Questions and answers from the chat room for today's show and other shows will be posted on my website at davidgagan.com. You can ask other questions directly by going to the contact section of my website, and I'll publish those answers as well. Also, I cover all these subjects and many more in my book, The Endless Journey. I look forward to sharing our thoughts every Friday morning at 9 a.m. United States Eastern Time here on W4CY.com. You can also find all the old episodes on iHeartRadio and iHeart.com. Truth is indeed stranger than fiction, and it turns out to be an amazingly good news story. We all have a great destiny ahead of us. Let me leave you with one last thought. You are a unique spirit having a life experience. You are far more important in the grander scheme of things than you can possibly realize. Enjoy your life. You've earned it.